Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the third and final chapter of the Book of Nachum in the OU's Nachyomi project. And it is once again, as we might have expected, directed at the city of Nineveh. And again, it's worth our while to remember that this means that Nachum as a prophet is directed solely, as far as we have it in history, as it comes down to us in Tanakh, towards Nineveh. And the lesson we're supposed to learn from Nahum, right? Because remember that, we need to remember that, Nevi'im are only included in Tanakh if there are lessons for us to learn, for eternity to learn. There are plenty of Nevi'im whose Nivuot were not recorded because, while they were important and vital at their own time, they did not have ramifications for all time. So, as we learn this final chapter of Nahum, and this is going to be mostly directed, really very narrowly directed at Nineveh and what's going to happen to it and why it's happening to it, we have to remember there are lessons in it for us to learn as well. So Parak opens up, the chapter opens up, Hoy Ir Damim Kula Kachash, Parak Balea, Lo Yamish Taref, it's a city of crime, it's utterly treacherous. Right, there's all these terrible things going on in it, people are lying, there are doctors Kachash, people are lying and cheating and stealing. Parak is that people take things from each other, and they are toref, they jump on each other, leap on each other every day. So it's being depicted, our Nineveh, as a city of crime, as a city with a lack of civil virtue, aside from anything else that might be wrong with it. I note this, I pay attention to this aspect of the presentation, because I could have easily imagined that just other things that we've already seen about Nineveh would be sufficient for them to be deserving of the punishments that are being predicted for them. Just they're having destroyed the Jewish people, or they're having thought that they were strong and Hashem wasn't strong. And yet, it comes back to, when we've seen this in the Jewish context as well, it's not only about Jews, it comes back to, though, they have flaws in and of in their own society, and those two are being highlighted as vital pieces of why it is that Nineveh is going to be in trouble. Kol shot, there's the crack of the whip, the kol rash, ofan, and wheels are turning, this is still here, and horses are running, markava mirakeda, and a pounding chariot, parash ma'aleh, there are horsemen coming against them, v'lahav cherev, v'vrak hanid, v'rov chalal, v'chovet pagav, v'enketu lagviyah, v'chashalu, b'gviyatam. So you're having all of these things that also happen. You had horses running, and people were killing horses, or hitting the horses, and you have the wheels moving, and you have lots of people being killed, lots of death going on. So the Radak thinks that it's the enemy's going to come and do all of this stuff in Pasuk Gimel, and that's going to be the punishment for him, Pesukim Bet and Gimel, the punishment for it. Rashi, it seems more like that's what the state was. And this, if we want to start applying it to places, this, I think, raises questions as to what are the levels of crime that are being spoken about here. It's an Ir Damim, it's Kula Kacha. So I think we might tend to read when it says Kula Kacha, it's all full of lying and cheating and stealing. So we think that means that everybody's stealing from everybody else, and there was absolutely no rule of law. The problem with that is that then gives us the freedom to think, and we're not nowhere near that. Whatever city we're living in, we're nowhere near having those problems, and therefore we don't have to worry that we're reaching that level. But I'm not, in my own mind, at all convinced that is what the Pesukim mean. When I say Kula Kachash, I strongly suspect that even if only 50%, and I think it's even less, I think if 20%, but it's certainly if only 50% of people are lying and cheating and stealing, and as long as there's some teref every day, right, there's killing every day, that I would think that's a city that has significant problems and significant issues and significant worries. And that means that even with a drastic reduction in crime, which is properly and appropriately celebrated, many, many cities, even in the United States, which is a fairly lawful country, we speak a lot about the rule of law in the United States, many such places are in some other sense lawless, right? Where there's a level of crime that we think of as, oh, of course there's that level of crime, you can't have a society without it. That may or may not be true, right? It may be that there's no society that's been better at wiping out crime than whatever level that has been reached in the United States of America in the present time, and there's what to celebrate in that. But at the same time, it's not clear to me that that wouldn't also be a level of crime that a Navi might say, you think you're so great, you think you're doing so well, but I'm telling you, you're like Nineveh, and Nineveh gets destroyed and is going to get punished for many things, but among those many things, Nineveh is going to be destroyed for these sets of characteristics of the crime that it is. So that's one simple thing to think about and to worry about as we look at Nineveh and wonder whether such things will need to happen, or whether the kind of a God who saw Nineveh and felt that Nineveh deserved punishment for this might look at societies today that think of themselves as largely law-abiding, and yet people cheat and steal each other from each other and see themselves as perfectly law-abiding citizens. And this happens sadly among Jews, but certainly happens among non-Jews as well, and you can see it happening and then they don't even think anything of it. I just this morning was reading about some project in upstate New York where they're installing wind turbines, right? And so that would seem like a good thing. It's an energy, it's an alternate form of energy, we're all in favor of that, we think that it'll help, and et cetera, and all those things. And yet it turns out that as they're installing them, that there was corruption going on, and people were making money off of it, and they were finding ways to give the contracts or make money off of giving out the contracts in ways that are problematic and probably illegal for their positions in the public trust. So whether the story is true or not, that kind of thing is not absolutely shocking to us, and it's not far from what's being spoken about with Nineveh here. Pasuk Dalet Merov Zinu Nezona Tovat Chein Ba'alat Kshafim HaMocheret Goyim Biznuneha U'Mishpachot B'Kshafeha. And so this Pasuk Dalet would more simply fit with the Radax version that we're talking about, their conquest. So Rashi reads it as that the way all of this happened with Nineveh, the way it got to this level was that it knew how to seduce, right, Zinunezona as a metaphor of harlotry or prostitution. So Rashi takes that further, so that they knew how to seduce the various nations around them, and that's how they managed to get them into their sphere of influence, but then of course they would conquer them and take them over, and that's how they built up and amassed their wealth and their position and their place in the world. And the Radak says the other way around, the simpler way, I think the simpler way in this context, the reason why all these punishments are happening to her is because she acted like a Zona. She would sell things that she shouldn't be selling, and she would use witchcraft in ways that she shouldn't, and all these wrongs that she was doing. Says, I'm going to come now, and I'm going to reveal shulayich. So shulayich are the lower parts of a woman's garment, meaning the seams, the bottoms of her dress, but the point is to have that revealed is inappropriate. And I'm going to show all the nations your nakedness and your shame, and your embarrassment to all the kingdoms. Right? To all the kingdoms, meaning that you're going to be revealed, and all of your wrongs and all of your weaknesses will be laid out in public. I'm going to fill you up and throw over you things that are terrible and disgusting, and I'm going to make a spectacle out of you. This is Hashem talking, right? So the punishment isn't only that they're going to be destroyed and lose their power and lose their place in the world, but they're going to be a figure of embarrassment in the world. Anybody who sees you is going to recoil from you. They'll all say, oh, Nineveh got destroyed. And they'll say, who wants to bother mourning over Nineveh? Right? Because they're all going to be happy because you've done all these terrible things to them. So that Nineveh has achieved power. But in achieving power, the question is, do you achieve power at the cost of others hating you or not hating you? So, again, if I'd like to apply this to today or wonder about it today, certainly there have been nations in the 20th century and the 21st century whose power has come at the cost of those around them and whose downfall would not bother them whatsoever. And then there are other nations that are not quite like that. So the United States of America stands somewhere in the middle, because there are certainly many nations, even though they benefit from us, even though we have the country of the United States of America has tried to help them develop and help them grow, nonetheless, there are many who take those gifts and yet are antagonistic in their attitudes toward the United States of America. So that question of, should a power fall and be destroyed and have it wreaked upon it, would the other nations be upset and sad, or would they just say, well, that's the way it goes? So Nineveh at least managed to put herself in the position that there are no menachamim. There are no one who want to comfort. So Hashem then wants to say to Nineveh, and part of your mistake is that you sort of seem to think of yourself as invulnerable, and your wealth, Rashi identifies the wealth is what they thought that would keep them in power, and the Radak thinks it's not their wealth, it's their power that would keep them in power, and they thought that they had a fortified city and they had rivers around it, But he said, Hashem says, but No Amon, which Rashi identifies as Alexandria, No Amon also had rivers all around, and they thought the river around it, the seas around it, made them easily defensible, right? Because it would take a navy, and it was hard to conquer such things. And yet Nebuchadnezzar eventually comes along and manages to conquer it easily. Kush atzma omitzrayim vein ketze put veluvim hayub ezratech. So this pasuk is really a continuation of all the helpers that she might expect. So Kush, I'm sorry, the Radak says it should be read as Otzma, the strength of Kush. Whereas the JPS thinks it's populous, right, that it's full of people. But Mitzrayim is certainly full of people, and all these cities that were supposed to be helping her, helping Nineveh, but Nebuchadnezzar conquered all of them. Gamhila Golah al Chabashevi, she went into exile in captivity. Gamulla Yeruchu, Birosh Kol Chutot, her babies also. This is just an image that happens. It's not clear to me why it is that the conquering armies of those times do this to babies, but apparently it's said in terms of what will happen. Another nevuah, what will happen to the Jewish people. Here it's being said about what happened to the Egyptians. Apparently, and this is obviously sad and terrible, but there was a custom of when you conquer people, you'd kill the babies. Barosh kol chutzot in every street corner, they would have lots to find out who would take her honored people and who would take her great people. So you too are going to be so full of yourself or so full of your belief that you're going to be saved, but you're also going to drink this bitter cup or poison cup of, and you're going to get drunk of it, of being conquered. And you're going to be completely overcome and you'll be gone, right? Radak says, Tina Alama, you'll disappear. It'll be as if there never had been a Nineveh, right? And the truth is today, if you speak to people about Assyria, so they don't, many of them, unless they're biblically oriented, won't even know what the place is. So that's the Nevuah that's going here. Come atavakshima oz me oyev. You're also going to have to seek refuge from your enemies. So this is a cycle of history that I think is perhaps part of the reason to put it in here, right? It's similar to the book of Daniel, let's say, where much of the book is about Daniel trying to, and not particularly succeeding, but trying to get the kings of Babel to realize that it's not their power that conquered, that gave them all that they did, or their gods. It's Hashem who does it here, too. This is another example of trying to get powerful cities. And there have been power after power in human history who have been at the pinnacles of power and then have faded from the scene, right? France used to rule the world. Spain, at some point, ruled the world. Spain and Portugal, at one point, had split the world among them. Just nation after nation, who were in Germany, certainly, right, who were in tremendous power, and so on, those world powers, and now have largely disappeared from the world scene in those significant ways. So this is the echoes of what's coming from Nineveh. Kol miftarayach, pasuk yidbet, kol miftarayach te'enim im bikurim im yuno'u v'naflu al pi ochel. All of your forts are fig trees with ripe fruit. So what does that mean? So the Radak thinks it means that they are so easy. Rashi and Radak agree. They're so easy to conquer, like a tree that's full of ripe figs. So if it's full of ripe figs, it's not that hard to get them. It's not that hard to harvest them, right? You just if you just shake the tree, they fall into the mouths of the people wanting them. I mean, it's not hard to get them off. So too, their fortresses. Hine amech nashim v'kirbech l'oyevayich patoach niftechu sha'arei artzeich. And your warriors, your people, who should have been, right, who should have been fierce and able to defend you, will become like women. They will be, with all due respect to women, tradition certainly was in the time of Nahum, that women weren't generally seen as fighters and as able to defend themselves against strong armies, and all due to respect to the legends and the stories of the Amazonian women who could. But here, the metaphor is that all that you're going to open your gates, they'll open as if by themselves. It'll be so simple to get in. So the prediction is, for all that Nineveh right now thinks of itself as having power and strength, they have to understand what's coming their way. Mimatzor shavilach, chazkim mivtzarayich, drawing water for the siege and strengthen your forts. Boi batit v'rimsiva chomer hachaziki malbein. So try to build things, right? So boi batit is walk in the clay and have the mud and have the malbein, have the bricks ready. Sham tochlech esh tachritich cherev tochlech kayalek hitkabed kayalek hitkabdi ka'arbe. So it's all going to destroy you, though. There'll be a fire that'll burn through you, right? They will burn you through the fire. They will kill you by the sword. Tochlech kayalek, they will eat you as the yelek, as the locusts finish off everything. So too, the enemy will finish you off completely. And you can... And then the end of the pasuk of Hitkabed Kayalik is, what would it be? What is the benefit of you that you would like a Yalik for a while? And this could be in terms of, this is probably in terms of either population, which is the way the JPS English has it, or Radak thinks if you made yourself great with lots of people. So it wasn't just the population, but it was the fact that you put yourself into positions of power and you saw yourself as spreading out through the whole world, it's not going to help you. Hirbeit Rochalayich Mikochavei HaShemayim Yalik Pashak Vayaof. You had like lots of merchants, right? This is not only a military conquest, it was a cultural and a financial conquest, similar to perhaps countries that we see today that think of themselves as conquering the world economically, that their economic system and their political system takes over the world. They see themselves as the power of the world. So the Radak says, and the point is, what's the value of all of this? Because like the Yelek, like the locust, when they go out to spread over the world, all of a sudden they fly away and then they're gone, and there's no lasting impression of them in the case of the locust other than the destruction that they have wrought, but nothing other than that. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Min Zarayach Arbeh, V'taf Zarayach Kegov Govai, HaChonim Bagderot B'yom Kara, Shemesh Zarecha V'Nodeid V'lo Noda Mikomo Ayam. Your guards were like locusts, your marshals were like piles of locusts, like Gov Govai, like other kinds of locusts that they set on the stone fence on a chilly day, and then when the sun comes out, they fly away, and you never know where they are. So here too, you set up all of these officers and people of power, and they would live in quietly, and they would sit in their walls, and they would sit wherever they would want, and then when the enemy came to them, all of their wealth and power is going to not stand them in any stead, and they're going to be just gone. Namu ro'echa melech Ashur yishkinu adirecha nafoshu amecha leharim ve'in mekabetz. So, this is directed at the king of Ashur. Your leaders, your advisors, those who like run the country for you, they're sleeping on the job. They don't see what's coming at them, and they don't see the proper way to handle it. And what's going to happen is that. If you think of leaders as the shepherds, which is the metaphor here, then the people are the sheep, and the people are going to scatter all over the mountains, which is what sheep do when they're left alone, and it will be difficult or impossible to gather them back, because here what's happening, though, and the metaphor that's happening is, because all the people of Nineveh are going to be scattered by the enemies, and there won't be anybody to get them back, and there will be no more Nineveh. Ein keha l'shivrecha nachlam nakatecha chol shem eishi mechatech uchaf alecha ki almi lo avra ra'atcha tamid. So, and there's no help for this, is what Nachum is saying. It's not going to happen. There's no help. Ein kehal dishvarecha. There's no healing for your injury. Your wound is terrible, right? And anybody hears about it is going to be... So Rashi is saying, kehal mizim mitzer al shivrecha. Kehal smechim. Everybody's going to be happy. Whereas the Radak thinks it's a question of healing, as the English here has it. Anybody who hears about this, they're going to clap their hands, because who's not suffered from you? So the upshot of this final parak is that all these terrible things are going to happen. They're going to happen to you because of wrongs that you've done, and you're going to disappear from world history, and you're going to not have any continuity, and nobody's really going to care. I would just point out, in terms of one little medrash that appears in two different places, appears in the Pesikta of Rav Kahana and also in the Pesikta Rabati in a different, slightly different form, just notes that in the middle of this parak, we had a few references to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, having gone into exile, and them also having lost out to Nebuchadnezzar. So the Medrash thinks that this is a general practice of Hashem, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that when he brings punishment to a nation, he sort of groups them with another nation so that they can comfort each other. And then, so here, Mitzrayim is seen as being the partner to Nineveh, to Ashur, in what they're going to go through, and therefore they can try to comfort each other. And that also is seen as happening with the Jewish people, with the Northern Kingdom, and then the Southern Kingdom, and they have the ability to comfort each other. I mentioned that Medrash because it brings back into mind the general issue underlying issue that we have perhaps not noted enough, but that should be part of our perspective and our understanding of a book like Nachum, which is that Hashem cares about all these nations. This is not celebratory, as in, oh, you're so terrible, let's have a good time about the fact that you're going to be destroyed. This is notice that you're being destroyed, and you know, be masik the maskanot hanichonot, as they say, as they said about a long time ago about Ariel Sharon, when it was when all the terrible events in Sabra and Shatila, so the whatever commission looked into it, they said they weren't going to actually prosecute him or recommend prosecution for him. They didn't think he did it. He actually broke the law, but it's upon him to look and to see and to draw the correct conclusions, whatever those would be. It was up to him to figure out what those correct conclusions are. So here, I think we have some kind of a similar situation going on, in that Hashem is not just telling this to Nineveh for the sake of telling it to Nineveh. Hashem is telling it to Nineveh, well, I think theoretically, although that probably wasn't expected even then, even back then, probably there would be some outside hope, perhaps Nineveh would learn the error of its ways. Not perhaps the most likely thing, and perhaps maybe Hashem had already given up on that in some way. But certainly any nation that comes after it, if they read this, this is what they should have been learning. So, and I have a couple more minutes. I won't use them all up. But you read this, I read this, and you read a Sefer like Nachum, you learn a Sefer like Nachum, and we've seen others. It comes up in Yeshayahu, it came up in Yirmiyahu, it came up in Yechezkel, it comes up all over Tanakh, where aside from Hashem beating up on the Jewish people for their various wrongs, and certainly financial wrongs loom large in them, Hashem comes back again and again to non-Jewish nations and talking to them about their mistakes. And their mistakes are also, these are not arcane issues of nitty-gritty details of halakha you couldn't have expected the non-Jews to know. These are, do you, in your experience of the world, recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world and your power is largely illusory? Right? It's not your power. It's Hashem has given you momentarily in the world stage of history some kind of power. Do you recognize that? Do you absorb that as being true of you? Do you conduct your financial dealings? I think it's vital to remember that theft is, and I just said this to somebody on Shabbos and they didn't remember this, and it doesn't necessarily register with, theft is one of the seven commandments of Noach, ordinary regular theft, and this is very difficult to say because we don't like to contemplate this possibility, but as far as the Gemara seems to be concerned, if a non-Jew steals a minimal amount of money, he's liable for the death penalty. So liable for the death penalty is not because the Torah or Hashem are bloodthirsty and enjoy giving up the death penalty. Liable for the death penalty is a way of the Torah saying, and it's the kind of thing that we long not to administer. But the way of Torah, for the Torah, it's a way of the Torah saying, this is a crime of such significance in your context, in your world, that your life is forfeit if you do such a thing. So it's the kind of thing, though, that has not been effectively eradicated from human society even now. And this is thousands of years later, after the Torah was given, after it's even probably thousands of years, certainly more than a thousand years, but I think it's thousands of years since Nahum gave his Nevuah. And yet, it's still true that we don't see theft as some kind of thing that can be eradicated. So if that's true, that shows you how far our society, perhaps any society that has been known to mankind until now, has not been able to perform even their most fundamental functions as a society in terms of worshiping God. Some of these societies have been societies that have claimed to worship God, have seen themselves, that their self-image has been of being God worshippers, and yet this fairly vital piece of that puzzle hasn't managed to get into play, get into the works. So I think that when we read the book of Nahum and other similar Nivuot, those are some of the central messages that I think we need to keep in our mind, let alone whether or not we can convince non-Jews around us of the need to pay attention to this. I think that would obviously be the better possibility, but the challenges of that are enormous. And it's some of those challenges that I understand Nahum to have been trying to grapple with in our things. Try to get a hearing, if not from Nineveh itself, at least from some awake and aware and concerned non-Jews, to help them come to understand or begin to understand the level of crime in which they are caught up, and the need to take steps to fix that, to eradicate it, to work on it, because these are fundamental issues that will lead and have led over and over again throughout history to the downfall of a particular society, and to its downfall, to its disappearance from human history, and all of which is sad, to a disappearance of human history, and then to the repeat of the cycle with the next nation that comes along, with the next power that comes along, and it is to break that cycle, hopefully, or it's in the name of breaking that cycle, I think, that Nachum was sent by Hashem to leave us with these words, and hopefully one day soon, they will in fact have their desired effect, and we will live in a world where the non-Jews, as well as the Jews, realize these basic fundamental messages, let alone the more complex messages that are also given to us by the Torah. So that is the end of the book of Nachum. Tomorrow we will pick up the book of Habakkuk. Have a great day.